The first time I ever came to Sojourners United Church of Christ was Easter of 2005, with three-year-old Alyssa and five-month-old Lexi on my hip with their father, Jeff. This was the place that our girls colored during worship, laying on the floor in the very back row, learned stories of faith, participated in the Christmas pageant, learned about the church, and learned about God. It is also the place where I and my immunocompromised bald Alyssa read the Shel Silverstein poem at Pastor Melanie's installation, the same poem that Pastor Melanie read at Alyssa's funeral. As clergy, it has been where I have preached, assisted with baptism, installations, and had my own ordination recognized as I transitioned from the Southern Baptist and Baptist Alliance to the UCC. This is where I shared the news, I was sitting right there, that Alyssa's knee was hurting and she needed an MRI. And this is where I received the hundreds of people who came to offer condolences before Alyssa's service. With this loaded history full of faith and the lack thereof, I wrestle before you. I've been a member of Sojourners since those early days and my ribbon is still in the midst. But I confess to you that God and I are not yet on speaking terms. I scream, God listens. I'm trusting God is big enough to take my anger and my hurt. And it's not that I thought God would protect me from the horrors of life, but not to feel God's presence during Alyssa's treatment and illness. When the cancer destroyed my daughter and then my family, it just was hitting below the belt. As you may know, Jeff and my marriage didn't survive the death of our daughter. Neither did my career in ministry. For I can't carry anyone else's pain authentically and lovingly when my own is too much to bear. I lost my daughter, my family, my career, and my identity. For those of you who I haven't yet met, I attend Sojourner still, but on Facebook. My faith still feels pretty vulnerable and raw. It's a place of my deepest agony, but also my deepest hope. Attending from the safety of my home, where if I cry, no one sees. Where if I need to leave, no one sees. Where if I break down in the music, no one sees. Worship is really complicated for me, the emotions and the thoughts that come along, and I prefer wading into those waters from the privacy of my own home. It's actually why I don't preach anymore. But preaching is sometimes where I do my best wrestling. So I invite you to wrestle with me today. While I never thought my faith was pretty, not the crystal chandelier kind of faith that people put on display and everybody goes, ooh, and ah, look at their faith. Mine was more like a piece of leather. The harder the ride, the softer and more flexible and pliable it got. Until. In our scripture this morning, we find the passage where baby Jesus was, as Jewish tradition required, dedicated at the temple. Simeon shares a prophetic word with the young family and speaks the words to Mary that a sword shall pierce her own soul too. For Mary, a young woman who had been through a very challenging engagement, to say the least, where there must have been talk and judgment, to finally hold this baby, have her husband with her, and be following Jewish tradition, what must it have felt like to hear the words that a sword shall pierce her own soul? We don't really know too much about her reaction, but several times in the Gospel of Luke, it says Mary pondered these things in her heart. So we can make an assumption here that Mary was interviewed. And at some point, in hindsight, she looked back at these moments in her life and added meaning and purpose to them enough that she shared them publicly. So we have these snippets of her story. Attending a worship service several years after Alyssa died, a Lutheran bishop was preaching about the death of her young adult son. He died on a mission trip to Haiti, where an earthquake took his life. They heard him singing hymns while they tried to get through him to the rubble, until they didn't. She said she finally understood this word, and a sword shall pierce your soul. The very essence of who you are, the spirit, the breath of life, the heart, the internal part of us. And it rang true. So Mary had time to think about Simeon's words, and perhaps hindsight is what brought this moment to her mind. But perhaps she held it as a dreaded fear her whole life. What did Simeon mean that a sword would pierce her soul? What would happen to this baby, to her? What would come to pass? How would it happen? And what did it mean? Have you ever been told a sword shall pierce your soul? Did you see the sword poised to pierce? Perhaps you have a heads up that the sword is coming. You have some kind of forewarning. Was it a possible diagnosis? Maybe it was a text on your partner's phone. What are the swords in your life? Maybe the challenges that attend the aging process or a disease progression. Maybe it's knowing a beloved relationship is coming to an end. Sometimes the sword could be a call in the middle of the night or the middle of the day, but a soul-searing, piercing moment that changes the essence of who you are forever. I think sometimes the anticipation can be its own sword. And life is full of moments that both build and destroy, joy and pain, and often they're deeply connected. The joy of this new bundle of life in Mary's arms, partnered with the promise of deep agony. In hindsight, again, which is what we presume Mary's acknowledging in her interview, what was the sword for her? I'm going to make the leap. I'm going to make the leap that the sword that pierced her soul was watching the torture, suffering, and murder of her son. I connect with her here. In my lived experience, nothing compares to the helplessness of knowing something is attacking your beautiful, loving, precious, and precocious child, and you can do nothing to save them. I couldn't save Alyssa. I couldn't save Lexi. I couldn't save Jeff. I couldn't save myself from the horror of our reality. Nothing saved us from the sword. A sword pierced my soul, the essence of everything I thought was mine and was me. My faith, my trusted piece of leather. It didn't protect me or my daughter or my family, not from diagnosis, not from treatment, not from her death. And in an act of what I believe is utter cruelty, I am mortally wounded, but I'm not allowed to die. Many times I've heard other people say to me, I don't know how you do it. If anything happened to my child, I would just die. It's not our choice to outlive our children. It was bad enough to hear the words Alyssa had cancer. Worse still to hear treatment wasn't working, and worse to know she understood. She saw her music camp teacher at a restaurant shortly after her terminal diagnosis, and she walked up to say hi to Mr. Bob. And he said, she said, they say I'm not gonna make it. She was 10. The sword pierced over and over. As Jesus approached his arrest and crucifixion, I wonder how and if Mary tried to comfort him. Was she among them at the Last Supper preparing the food? Did they go on a walk together that night in Gethsemane when he prayed so hard that the cup would be taken from him that his sweat dropped like blood? Did he come to his mother and lay his head in her lap as she stroked his hair back and whispered words of comfort? My guess is wherever Mary was, she was praying out of her suffering too. We know she was at the foot of the cross. We know Jesus spoke to her. We know that she watched her son be tortured. We know she watched him die, powerless to intercede. As he cried out, I can't help but think Mary cried out too, as the sword took its place in her soul. The moment that sword pierces your soul, do you know it? When you get the call, when you hear the news, when you hold the hand, what is the impact of the sword in your soul? For you, like me, is it deep grief? Is it addiction? Is it mental illness? Is it a disease, something chronic that won't leave you alone? Is it the loss of a beloved, a parent, a daughter, a child, a pet? What are we powerless to fix, remove, heal? What are the thorns in our flesh? What are the swords in our soul? In that moment when the sword pierced her soul, I can imagine it was all she could do to try and be present, to remind Jesus he was loved, to try and stand strong so that when he looked down from the cross, he saw at least one person who loves him. And I think sometimes that's all that's left to do, love. If I think of God not just as Jesus dying on the cross, but God also as a loving, faithful mother, steadfast, enduring nearby. Maybe all God could do was show up at the cross and be the one face that Jesus could see in the midst of suffering. One face looking upon him as he was persecuted. One face full of love. Maybe God couldn't fix Alyssa's cancer because the humans who have resources to impact childhood cancer and osteosarcoma haven't shared enough funding, done enough research. Maybe all God could do was stand beside us and look on as the face of love, faithful and present. When God doesn't magically fix what ails you, what then? I mean, is God no longer present when you don't get what you want? Or might God be present in a presence? While I didn't feel God's presence in my spiritual life and connection, I definitely saw God moving people every day of Alyssa's treatment. I know God was there through the love and care of this specific congregation and the people of it. When I wrote this sermon, I specifically thought of Mo riding a bicycle to get white cheddar cheese popcorn because it was the only thing Alyssa's chemo-impacted stomach could do. And I got stuck at the hospital unexpectedly without feminine hygiene products or Tylenol. And I needed somebody to bring them to me. Mo did that. This church had the wonderful fundraiser for us, which is how we adopted Snowball the Bunny, because Alyssa realized it was a meat bunny and she was a vegetarian and we weren't gonna have that. So many of you stood with us those awful months. Maybe as the sword pierced Jesus, the sword pierced Mary, and all that's left to do is love. And John, chapter 19, verses 26 and 27, when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing beside her, he said to his mother, "Woman, here is your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her into his own home. In a culture and a world where women had no power, no authority, no ownership, Jesus made sure his mother was taken care of and that she had a man's household to protect and care for her, because she now had to live with that sword piercing her soul. At least she would not also be cast as a penniless widow with no one to call her. How do you live life with a sword piercing your soul? For Mary, we don't know a lot about how she lived after Jesus' death. We don't have a lot of information. I do hope she was among those who saw the resurrection and ascension. I do hope in the web of life, other mothers who lost children reached out to her. I hope the community enveloped her. I hope they gave her space to grieve and remember her child. I am certain her life was different. But because someone thought enough of Jesus to interview Mary, she must have known how important her baby was on some level. She had time to reflect on the story and the journey of her life, so that we have these snippets. So how do we live on when a sword pierces our soul? I used to say to my girls when they were little that if anything ever happened to them, I would be sad forever. I kind of said it a lot. It was my way of trying to tell them, you're central to my heart. You're the most important thing I have. You're everything I love. When Alyssa died, Lexi remembered, and she said, "You're sad forever started, Mommy." How do you live when sad forever is your lot? Jesus offered Mary an option, a way to move forward. And I share with you that Alyssa offered me an option too. Before Alyssa died, she gave me her own words from her own cross. We were riding in the car to yet another treatment, and Lexi, Alyssa, and me. And Lexi was giving Alyssa sisterly grief about her lack of eyebrows. And Alyssa said, "Strange." But then immediately said, "No, I wouldn't wish this on anyone. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy." I affirmed her caring heart and said, "I know she wouldn't wish it on anyone. But I said, I'd trade places with you in a heartbeat, Alyssa. I just don't really want to leave you girls without a mommy." And Alyssa said, "Oh, Mommy, no matter what happens to me, you have to stay and be a mommy to Lexi." Most children facing death ask their parents to go with them. Mine told me I had to stay and gave me a job to do. So how do you live with a sword piercing your soul? One ragged breath at a time. Trying to create some meaning and purpose and some joy in the after. And I don't believe it's inherent meaning and purpose where people say, "Oh, this happened so that." I don't buy that for a second. But I do believe we can create meaning and purpose from the tragedies that happen. As Alyssa learned to live without her leg, she maneuvered differently in the world. For those of you who aren't familiar with the grief observed, C.S. Lewis is writing about his experience after the loss of his wife and his grief. Alyssa had to protect herself against the bumps and falls and phantom pain triggers. As C.S. Lewis imagined, Alyssa lived. She had to find ways to hop and adapt, and she had to find stories to tell the children and the adults who stared at the one-legged little bald girl. She had several favorites. "You should see what happened to the shark." Or, "My mama told me if I didn't clean my room, she'd cut my leg off." She found places to laugh, and she found places that were safe to cry. She was scared, and she most definitely did not want to die. She said she wanted more time with her family, and I promise you, her family wanted nothing more than time with her. With my own sword, I do maneuver differently in the world around me, and I appreciate those who see the invisible sword piercing my soul and make space for me. Certain days and certain memories are going to bump the sword, and the agony is going to be as fresh and accessible as December 31st, 2012, the day she died. I'm learning to adapt what helps me breathe through the pain. I am learning who helps me bear it. And I've got 10 years experience at it now, too. A few like me have a sword. Sometimes people can see them and sometimes they can't. How do you create meaning and purpose? How do you maneuver in the world? The places or smells you need to avoid. The places or smells you need to find. The memories that you want to cherish. The ways to talk about your before, your during, and your after. There are some gifts to living with my sword. I'm no longer afraid of death. I'm going to join Alyssa. Wherever, whatever, energy, nothingness, consciousness, heaven, I join my daughter. I also listen far more carefully to people in deep grief. Before Alyssa died, I think I was among those who figured you must adjust after a year or two to the loss of someone so special. I know that's not true. I also know what it's like to have a deep and intimate, amazingly trusting love and connection that's beyond most people's imagination, because trauma can do that. And I know what it is to lose it. I know how important relationships are. I know how important the now is. That is what her Live Alyssa Live motto, the bracelets I still wear every single day, and on the shirt. Live what you have right now. Enjoy what you have right now. Make the most of what you have right now. I have a few stories that I hope are helpful to those who follow me on the deep journey of grief, living with the sword in their souls. And I try to pay it forward by helping the Alyssa House, for each family that comes to stay has words of their own. And I keep screaming at God. I do my best screaming in the shower. You can cry there quietly, and no one really bothers you there. So let me be clear again. I saw God every day of Alyssa's treatment in the people who showed up, that presence nearby, just not in my relationship with God, the God that I understood who talked to me in a certain way, the God that I followed my call into ministry and service, the God that used to give me a word every now and then so I'd know I was on the right track and that I'd know I was in the right place. That God was painfully silent for 12 years. Some people will say, well, your pain made you deaf. Maybe, but I promise I was listening more intently than ever. Very, very recently, I was wrestling again with my hurt and my hope. And again, in the shower, doing some of my best screaming, because when people come to you with their celebrations that, oh, God was with me because it wasn't cancer, or God was with me because it wasn't, or I got what I wanted, so God is so good. Somebody came with sharing their celebration, and I'm happy for them. But my hurt cries out, but you weren't there for Alyssa. And in the shower, I heard a clear voice say, yes, I was. I gave her to you. I don't like living with a sword in my soul. I expect you don't either. Learning to live in a new way hurts. Grief is real, and it's raw, and it's never ending. And so is love. Real and raw and never ending. Love at the temple, holding a new baby with a prophecy that's fearful. Love at the foot of the cross in the moment of piercing. Love from the cross to a mother and a beloved disciple and to us. I look at it this way. There's love in the fear. There's love in the pierce. And there's love in the pain. I don't know how or if God and I are going to come to terms. As Alyssa used to say, I miss my old life. The one before cancer. But like Alyssa, I don't have a choice. And my guess is neither do you. So the best I can offer us is to follow Alyssa's example. Live each day trying to make the most of what's before us while learning to maneuver a little differently in the world. The Alyssa House makes me proud that there is something good done in her memory and in her honor. But nothing makes it worth it. The sword sucks. But it is the price I pay for the privilege of being Alyssa's mom. And I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. I bear my sword with pain that you have seen this morning, but I also bear it with pride that I hope you see this morning. For it represents the deep love of a cherished child. For those of you with swords, I would guess all of us have them. Let us be gentle with one another, making space for the swords in others' lives. And remember to love in the fear, love in the pierce, love in the pain. For love is all that matters.